the plan to reopen Maine businesses cautiously. Retail shops and restaurants across the state have now had the weekend to absorb the latest guidance from Governor Mills about reopening Maine's economy. On Friday, the governor announced a loosening of restrictions for all but Maine's four most populated counties. And earlier this month, she outlined a phased reopening process for the state. But just because it's allowed doesn't mean it will happen. Business owners have a lot to balance, including their safety and financial concerns. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with the state's Commissioner of Economic and Community Development about how decisions are being made and what they mean for Maine businesses, and the president of the State Chamber of Commerce about reaction to the plan. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's a tricky balance, how to bring people back to work and get the economy moving while still doing what we can to protect the public's health and safety. As Maine tries to embark on a reopening plan, we discuss how that can be done in a practical way. Joining me, Heather Johnson, who is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, and Dana Connors, President of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you looking forward to opening your business, or are you concerned? As a customer, are you eager to go back out to eat or to shop? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you so much for joining us, both of you. And Heather, why don't I start with you and ask you if you can explain the process that has gone into these guidelines for reopening the economy. Heather, are you there?
Whoops, there. Can you hear me now, Jennifer?
Yes, perfect.
Sorry.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Sorry for that. So the process going into this was to look at how much can we do safely. And so what we are doing is working with industry associations as well as individual business owners kind of to create diverse reflections from across the state on size and geography, taking those business practices, really understanding kind of where the risk points are, and then working with a team of healthcare providers, so occupational health specialists, people from different hospitals across the state, and some folks from the Health and Human Services team to look at how do we mitigate some of the risk. And then once we have their layer on it, we take it back to the industry to see kind of what they find executable and what's not. And then there's a little bit of back and forth in that discussion. And then we take those checklists out and people put them into place. And as people put them into place, we continue to find things that we need to tweak and adjust. And we're happy to do that as we go as well.
All right. Dana Connors, I have a feeling you've been hearing from a lot of people about the first set of guidelines issued, the phased plan, and now the adjustment last Friday of allowing a little more reopening, including today in many counties, the reopening of many retailers if they want to and if they can follow the guidelines. What kind of response are you hearing from the business community?
Overall, I think I can begin by stating that there's a tremendous empathy for the responsibility as well as the leadership that our governor and our state department, our administration, has, how they've conducted, how they've placed public health and safety as an absolute top priority. Given that, I think when it first came out in late April, April 28th, I think the phases and particularly the dates that were assigned to each of the various businesses that could open caused some angst, because I think that in spite of the fact the governor was clear that these were areas and times in which businesses could look forward to opening that at the same time she made it clear that this was an evolving situation, it was flexible, and if you felt that you could live within the guidelines and the certain criteria, the protocols and so forth, that you could make an appeal. And I think I heard the commissioner last week say that she had close to 3,000 or over 3,000 appeals. And I think last week was a very good week, because the concerns that we had as an organization really centered around the testing, the timeline, trying to get businesses open as quickly as possible within the safeguards and the protocols necessary, that the regionalization approach, that not all parts of the state should be treated the same. Both last week in terms of testing as well as regionalization, I think were really very significant in terms of progress, but also in terms of lifting the spirits, giving people hope and encouragement. And that's something that I think a lot of businesses desperately needed. And then the opening today of retail in those 12 counties that represented the regions that were open, as well as the restaurants in those same counties starting next week. And June will be here before we know it, and there's a lot more that can take place then and do so safely. So I think that the big issue that so many of us see, and I know commissioner is working hard at it. As a matter of fact, let me state this on behalf of the administration, but also in particular Commissioner Johnson. She has been stalwart in her efforts to communicate, to engage us, to address our concerns, and try to overcome something that is totally unprecedented, and as our governor likes to say, there is no playbook for this. So I think tourism remains the big thing, because it is such an important element in our economy, whether you express it in dollars or whether you express it in terms of employment. It reaches all parts of our economy and has a tremendous sense of worth. And I think that again, the commissioner, I know, has worked with us, with the hospitality industry, with tourism, to try to address and overcome what is at play right now as the only recourse, and that's a two-week quarantine. And we know how that's going to play in a seasonal effort in Maine, when 70% of probably tourist dollars comes June, July, and August, that period of time. So.
Sure, and from out of state. And you all may not know, just this past week, we did a special, America Amplified special, with a number of New England states on reopening tourism. And every state seems to have a similar quarantine policy right now. I want to, Heather, I have a question for you, but very quickly, Dana, I wanted to ask you, in the 12 counties where retail stores are allowed to reopen today, do you have a sense of how many are actually reopening?
Well, that's a great point. I don't. I'll bet if Curtis Picard was listening, he'd give us a better sense of that, because retail is his area of responsibility and part of his association. But I will say this, you know, and again, I think one of the things that we're seeing out there is how Mainers really have taken on responsibility, whether it's the business or the individual. And I think that bodes so well for our state dealing with this pandemic. And I think that you're even seeing in the restaurant or the retail, those that are saying, we really appreciate the fact that we can't open today or next week, but we're going to be careful and cautious and make sure that we open safely with respect to both our customers as well as our employees. That says an awful lot about the business as well as the individual.
Commissioner Johnson, we're talking about tourism, talking about other states. How much of the decision-making that you are making, that the governor is making, is being done in consultation with our neighbors? How many conversation with New Hampshire and Vermont's governors, for example, especially when we're looking at the kinds of industries in which people may be choosing one state or the other, like tourism? Is this something that is we're trying to have a regional attitude towards, regional policies?
I think I will say, I guess, Jennifer, that the governor feels strongly that she will do what is best for Maine first, but certainly wants to make sure that there is a regional lens to it if that's appropriate. You know, to most people that come to Maine come through one of these neighboring states. A lot of them do, and either stop in those neighboring states as well or have some connection to them. So, you know, it's really hard to think about Maine as an isolated instance in this case, but, you know, there we may all take a little bit different approach as well. I have a call later this afternoon with Massachusetts on kind of what they're working on. So I do think there's a lot of integration work. We are trying to find common ground where we can. I think it's much easier for residents and tourists alike if we can find a safe path forward that is more regional in nature so people know, right, what to expect and how to apply the expectations. So I would say both are happening right now as we speak.
Heather, Dana Connors mentioned tourism in the two-week quarantine that seems to be the most controversial of the reopening plan, that anybody who comes into Maine from out of state would need to quarantine for 2 weeks before he or she can go to a restaurant, for example. How firm is that decision? How are you going to make a decision about whether to change it?
Yeah, that's a great question and probably the biggest question we've gotten since the restart plan launched. In the plan, it actually talks about testing or quarantine. We believe there are potential options. We feel really strongly, right, that we need to keep Maine residents and tourists coming to Maine safe, and that tourism is an incredibly important part of our economy and we need to have it operating. And so, right, there is this balance there to be created. I think lodging owners have done an incredible job looking at modifications and thinking about how would they keep people safe while they're there. I think towns are looking at changing traffic patterns and on streets, being able to potentially open up some streets to pedestrian traffic, things like that to try to mitigate, again, additional risks. So there's a lot of work going on to get to an answer that does both of those things, right? Keeps Maine residents and tourists safe, or as safe as possible, and kind of can keep this industry going and keep them moving forward. So, you know, there's no way to overstate the importance of the tourism industry on the Maine economy, and the downstream effects of the tourism industry on Maine's economy. You know, that is just a critical avenue for us. So, I think we continue to actively work with the industry on solutions and also to continue to work down scientific solutions that help mitigate that risk as well.
Dana, when we had our conversation last week about New England tourism, part of the conversation was about how welcome people from out of state would be in communities. We've already seen some distrust and some people discouraging people out of state from coming, for example, to their summer home or thinking that they can come to Maine to wait out the pandemic. And I'm wondering if that's something that worries you, that when we finally do get the tourism sector reopened, that there will be not exactly a welcome mat out throughout Maine.
Well, it does bother me because, truth be told, as we both have indicated, tourism is so much a part of our economy and we so depend on it from, you know, they say it's an $8 billion industry, but I think that's a very conservative estimate because it's, as this has unfolded, more and more have reached out to me and the things that you wouldn't think of that's associated with tourism is in fact. And I think that, again, it's a matter of, I think, fear more than anything else. I think that there will be those people for certain, but the overwhelming population will see that the tourism industry, for what it's worth to our people and to our livelihood here in the state. There will also be those from away that would customarily make this their place of destination for a week, 2 weeks, or whatever their summer vacation or fall vacation may be, that'll be reluctant, as we're finding out for those going back into dining experiences or other places. There's this fear that I don't want to put myself in harm's way. I don't want to subject my family or myself to the possibility of this virus. So I think that it works both ways, and I think there will be this transitional period without doubt, but the certainty of the two-week quarantine really does put in place a dampening effect on those months that are most vital to our tourism, and I can't say enough good about what the commissioner is trying to do to wrestle that and to try to put in place a type of policy or treatment test or even guidelines that allow the non-resident to come to Maine as quickly as possible. We know that to Mainers, we can do that in the 1st of June with guidelines as well. But so much of our tourism trade depends on people coming to our state, and that's really where the issue lies and the challenge is at the moment.
Heather Johnson, another controversial aspect has been the decision to allow hairdressers to reopen, stylists to open before other businesses. Tell me about that decision. Why were barbershops, hair salons, sort of to be in the first wave of businesses allowed to reopen when they are, by their very nature, involving personal contact?
Yeah, so it's a really good discussion that we've been having. Actually, I got asked this question a couple of times. So thanks for the chance to kind of talk this through. What we were looking at in the first phase, we looked at what some other states had done, obviously, and then we looked at the makeup of our small business, of where small businesses come from. We have over 2,700 small businesses that are salons in and across Maine. A lot of them, the majority of them, are owner-operated, which, again, allows the owner to say, I am willing to go back to do this, right? And they can make decisions that balance kind of their livelihood with kind of the risk. So there's an employee-owner piece to that as well. Plus, they had really high standards already around hygiene and how some of that would work. So adding some additional mitigation options in for them, there's a structure to that that is pretty aligned with the work that they were doing already. So there are lots of reasons there that I think make good sense once you can talk it through.
Mm. Heather, I understand the governor has put together the Economic Recovery Committee with expert advice as we navigate this. Tell me about its work and how the committee will help you and the governor come to decisions.
Yes, we're really excited to have such a great group joining kind of this work. And their work will really be focused on longer range activities, right? How do we recover, right? What are the implications long term of that COVID has had on our economy, and how do we recover from some of those? And it will really start to look at how do we weave our way back to the strategic plan. I mean, we were on, what, maybe Dana, you and I were on 6 months ago talking about the strategic plan and how we were going to grow our economy. And obviously all of that has been put on hold in the short term. This economic advisory group will help kind of reset our steps to get there and help us think through some of that broader work. So they won't be incredibly involved in the day-to-day restart work, but they will be involved in making recommendations around the long term. How do we realign to the strategic plan and the work to grow our economy?
We're talking with the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, Heather Johnson, and the President of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, Dana Connors. Our topic, reopening the economy. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Roosevelt Campobello International Park, a proud sponsor of On This Day in Maine's History, heard daily on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. And Bernstein Scher, a law firm that counsels clients through contracts and courtrooms, and the business challenges outside them. BernsteinSure.com.
Hi, this is Jennifer Rooks, host of Maine Calling. I hope you and your family are staying safe as we navigate these extraordinary times together. We at Maine Calling are always doing our best to meet the needs of the community, but especially now. We want to make sure you have a space to ask questions about topics that are on your mind and the ones that are important for us to know more about. That's why, at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, when there was a lot of information to keep up with, we expanded the show to 2 hours. Even now, we remain committed to learning about and discussing this pandemic from all perspectives. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for calling during the show, and thank you for supporting Maine Public Radio. Contributing listeners make this service possible every day. And now, more than ever, we need public radio. So thank you for doing your part. If you haven't supported this station yet, please join me as an Evergreen friend and make a monthly donation that will help Maine Public plan for the future. MainePublic.org is the place to give. And once again, thank you. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what does it mean to reopen our economy? What will it look like? And how do people feel about it? Our guests are Dana Connors, who is president of the State Chamber of Commerce, and Commissioner Heather Johnson with the Department of Economic and Community Development. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Email talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And I'll start with Chris, who's calling from Lubeck. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. This is I've listened to your show every day, and thanks a lot for all this time during the virus. And I was earlier, the gentleman had mentioned about, you know, we're opening up so that people's spirits will lift up and all that good stuff. Okay, now this might sound silly, but does that mean that I can go visit my kids now in Princeton? Princeton, Maine, that is.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Chris. I'm not sure we have exactly the right guess for that, but Heather, I'm going to toss this to you. I think a lot of people are, you know, not as concerned about when they can go to a store as they are when they can see family members.
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult right time for everybody to not be with family and people that are important to them. And I think the guidance that we're suggesting for people is still to remain really cautious, right? You know, as things start to open up and as we start to move forward, you know, the guidance around gatherings is less than 10. I would say, you know, the more people kind of use safe practices like social and physical distancing, as people kind of are using masks and other tools to keep themselves and their family members safe. You know, I think people will be able to start doing some of that work. So, yes, I think depending on the situation, you can start to visit family. But again, I would say we're encouraging people to be incredibly careful about that. Right. You know, I have a mother-in-law who has some vulnerable characteristics based on age and other underlying health conditions. And so, like, I'm not going to go see her in person right now. We certainly miss her, but we aren't going to go see her in person. We can Zoom with her and talk to her in other ways. On the other side of that, you know, I think people will make those good decisions with the information they have.
I've seen a lot of people doing, with the nicer weather, sitting outside in folding chairs more than 6 feet apart and chatting. Dana?
Absolutely.
That's exactly right, because I have the same issue when it comes to my grandchildren, and so we've made it work at first by Zoom, but that seemed either overused or undervalued when it comes to grandchildren. So we set up outside their window, and they may even walk out, but nowhere's near us. It's better than not seeing them at all, and we appreciate that opportunity. But to that lady's point, that just being able to see family does indeed lift your spirits. I think my reference was really that we struggled for this time not knowing as businesses, and Maine is such a small business state. I mean, by SBA standards, 99% of our businesses qualify for their definition of small business, which is under 500 employees. And so many of them put their life, their soul, all their savings into it. Their employees are extremely valuable to them, and they're almost desperate to get back into business. So when last week occurred and you opened up, or the governor opened up 12 counties of our state, it did give people that sense of encouragement, that hope that they were looking for, and I'm sure lifted their spirits as well. But nothing lifts your spirits as much as being able to be with family, and we all try to make it work one way or another, for sure.
Chris, thank you so much for your call. I have a tweet from Martin. Maine has the biggest economic opportunity of the century. Now it's not just possible to work remotely and live where you want to. It's expected. There is a new appreciation for rural outdoor living going on as folks find they can work from home, enjoy the outdoors, and feel safe. So there's somebody looking at the bright side of this, Heather. What's your response?
So, Martin, thank you. You know, we feel the same way. And Dana and all of, and so I want to thank Dana, because as we went through the economic plan, right, there was a lot of discussion about attracting people to Maine, right, and this rural out-migration. I think really what we're seeing now is an absolute pivot to people seeing all of the value that some of these more rural communities might bring and having access to work from anywhere and access to all of the outdoor assets that our state has. And so, you know, this is a really great opportunity, I think, for Maine. I agree with Martin long term that, you know, that this, there are elements of this that could be helpful to our long term opportunities. You know, certainly we've got some infrastructure. If you want to work from anywhere in Maine right now, we don't have broadband infrastructure that would support that. But conceptually, as more people are getting used to working remotely and more businesses will support it and seeing other values to that, then I think we can solve the infrastructure problem to be a great destination.
Yeah,
we have go ahead, Dana.
No, I echo that. I think that there's no greater testimonial to both the rural opportunity that our state provides people and the testimonial to really make that work in a way we want. You've got to have a broadband with the speeds necessary to allow you to live there, work there, and be content with all the measures that are important to you.
We have two related emails. I'm going to start with one from Robert. Happy to see our Maine small businesses finally just starting to reopen, but frustrated and discouraged that food service is not being required or choosing not to adhere to the wearing of masks and gloves in food prep. When asked, they simply respond they don't have to as they're not within 6 feet of people. Truth or not, I don't want an ice cream cone or sandwich that badly. And then similarly, a message from Sue. I went to a local donut shop that just opened and the person at the drive-up window was not wearing a mask. I thought anyone handling or serving food would have to wear a mask. If this is not required, why isn't it? Heather, is it required?
Yeah, so public spacing, right, there is an executive order right now around mask wearing, and that is it's a standard that we've set. There is a lot of discussion about it in food prep work, in non-customer facing situations, so not sure kind of where they're at. But yes, certainly in the drive-through scenario, the person at the drive-through should be wearing a mask.
All right. We'll go to Jeff, who's calling from Walterboro. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm thinking that in order, you know, the questions that people are bringing up about people not wearing masks or gloves or distancing and that kind of thing in establishments that are opening, that there needs to be, and this is for the commissioner, there needs to be an inspection process to verify, to certify that these places are doing what's necessary to be done. And that means slowing it down. I mean, can we be overwhelmed by economic pressures that put people at risk? I don't think it's wise, and I think that there's a way to do it in a wise way, and the people who would be inspected would be feeling like, hey, I'm inspected, I'm certified, and that would mean something to the people that are coming in. That,
sure,
you know,
Jeff,
we've been reviewed. What
Thanks
about
for
that?
Your question. Heather, is there going to be some sort of inspection process to make sure that businesses are indeed following the policy?
You know, Jennifer, our discussions with businesses, and Dana, jump in on this as well, is that businesses really want to do what it takes to keep their employees and their customers safe. Most of these main businesses, right, are just critical parts of their local community, and it's not their intent to go out and do something that is not in the best interest of their community members. So we are, right, we have that confidence in our small business community and want to support them as they grow. We certainly don't have the infrastructure to go out to every single restaurant and do a pre-check for them. And we don't think that we need to, right? They are very responsible, in general, very responsible business owners. what we do have is a back-end option, right? If people are seeing these challenges and issues, that they can report them, and then we can react to the reports and solve them that way.
Yeah, I have to say that I think that situation, I hope and I do believe, is the exception, not the rule. I have to back up everything that Heather just said, because to me, the best testimonial to this commitment, this responsibility that goes with the business, is the fact that this past week that 12 counties of our state were allowed to open up, and some have decided not yet, because I want to be sure that I put in place those types of protocol, those guidelines to protect my employee and the customer. I think by far my experience has been that businesses have really stepped into this lane of responsibility and want to do absolutely everything that's right for all the right reasons. And I think that without question, there may be some confusion by people. There may be some who just in principle don't want to do it. But I think by and large, the overwhelming majority is represented by businesses and individuals that wanted to be open sooner than later, but didn't want to do it at the sacrifice of public health or safety.
So, but just to be clear to Jeff's question, Heather, right now there is not a plan to roll out some sort of inspection process.
There is not. We are responding to issues as we hear of them, and certainly expect a lot of leadership from the small business community.
Jeff, thanks for your question. We'll move to Thomaston and Noreen. Hi, Noreen. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. I listen to it all the time. My question and concern is that how are we going to, most people that come to Maine for visiting are here for maybe a week or 2 weeks. So how are we going to know whether they're, first of all, quarantining, and if they're here for 2 weeks, that's not enough time to quarantine, because then they have to go home. And I don't know how we're going to know that they're quarantining themselves. And I rely on tourism. I am a waitress for a caterer, and that is basically all the people that come to Maine to come to these weddings that I cater with. And so I'm very concerned. I want them to come, but I also don't see how it's possible.
Sure. Honestly. And before I have our guest answer, I'm going to read a similar email. This is from Phyllis. She says, the wording of the 14-day quarantine requirement is something of a catch-22. It says that lodging is open to out-of-state visitors who have completed a 14-day quarantine. It says nothing about completing the quarantine in Maine. Can we please have this clarified? We had that same question on Thursday when we did our regional program, Heather. If someone quarantines in their home somewhere else and then comes to Maine, does that count?
It doesn't count under the current executive order, but this quarantine question, I think, continues to be maybe the primary piece right now that we are working through. We've spent a lot of time over the weekend working on it and this week. So there's lots of questions about the quarantine. I think the first discussion we just had summed it up perfectly, right? Which is, we all want it to happen. Just how does it happen safely, and how do we manage and monitor that work? And so that's the piece that's happening now, right? The intent is to utilize modifications, science, and other options that we're reviewing as we speak to find a safe way to kind of activate and mobilize this tourism season. And so there's more to come there, but more on the quarantine for sure to come. And I think, you know, our goal is to find some solutions that allow people options that work for whatever their situation is.
And when you say, Heather, that there's more to come, how soon do you think there'll be some new guidance around the quarantine question?
Jennifer, I hate to commit to that right now. I think we will continue to make steps forward. And as we look at options, we'll continue to try to be as transparent with that work as possible.
All right. Well, we're talking about reopening Maine's economy. We do have to take another quick break. We'd love to hear your question. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get in a quick email, a brief email, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Ocean View at Falmouth, committed to the health and well-being of its residents and the greater community. And New England Cancer Specialists, proud to support the healthcare workers who are keeping people safe at this critical time. And Maine Public, for keeping Mainers informed.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On May 11, 2000, Governor Angus King, Maine's 72nd governor, signed a bill that made Maine the first state to threaten the pharmaceutical industry with price controls. If the industry can consolidate and increase its market power, so can we, Mr. King said. The statute was enacted because of the Maine state legislature's concern that many Maine citizens who were not Medicaid recipients could not afford necessary prescription drugs.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine!
Hello, I'm Mark Vogelsang, President and CEO of Maine Public. Even in extraordinary times, some things remain constant, and Maine Public's commitment to serving you is unwavering. We're expanding our educational resources to support our Maine kids at home, with Maine teachers offering new remote lessons on Maine Public Television. It's called The Learning Space. Our journalists are continuing to provide coverage of the pandemic, daily CDC briefings, deep dive conversations, and independent reporting. And of course, we're committed to providing classical music as a place of calm and respite from the stress we all feel, with companionship for you and expanded support for performers and organizations on radio and television. We're proud to do this essential work and proud to be listener-supported. We're here for you because you've been here for us. So from everyone here at Maine Public, thank you. You know, in times of crisis, public radio is needed more than ever, which is why I'm asking you to join me in supporting this one-of-a-kind service. Together, we can keep Maine connected and informed. Please make your donation today at mainepublic.org. Thanks very much.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about how Maine is restarting the economy and how people feel about it. My guests are Heather Johnson with the Maine Department of Economic and Community Development and Dana Connors with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Our conversation, you can join it at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to go to an email from Joanne. She writes, "As a consumer, I am anxious to support my local economy by supporting our local businesses. And yet I'm anxious that not everyone is on board with the complying with state guidelines. We've seen business owners and community leaders openly defy safety recommendations under the guise of liberty, seemingly pitting public safety against economic growth. How can a consumer easily recognize that a local business is actively in full compliance with state safety guidelines? In New York City, there are placards in the windows of every restaurant that denotes a relative grade relative to safety guidelines. Will there be something like this for merchants in Maine?" Dana, I'm going to turn to you. We've seen the stories on the news.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that Heather has the opportunity for those who seek that type of identity. There is a placard that she can speak to that I'm aware of that the business can put in their window or put on display that shows their commitment that they've met those guidelines. But I would also say, this may sound cavalier, but I don't mean it to be at all, I think that by and large, the vast majority of businesses will do everything they can in terms of meeting the guidelines, providing that protection and safety. And quite frankly, in many ways, it'll be very visible. If you go to a restaurant and you see the the plastic barriers or you see the tables apart, you see that those guidelines are complied with, you're going to know immediately that their eye is on the right, their priority is on the right, doing the right thing. I don't think it would be all that difficult. Yeah, in the media, there's a lot of attention about those who are either suing because of constitutional rights or taking other actions. But I would argue that that is the exception, and it's not the rule. As a matter of fact, when we all take a pause for a moment and we look at what our state is rated in terms of how we're dealing with this, we come out very, very well. I think I read recently we're the sixth lowest in the nation per capita on the infection rate, that we're moving faster than any other state in New England or the Northeast and opening up business. That I think just yesterday I read that based from the Kaiser Family Foundation, I believe it was, that with the testing and the tracing, that we're one of the best position states in the nation to fight this virus, with the exception of Rhode Island. I mean, when you take a pause and look at how we're doing and what we're doing, there's a lot of good to be said. And I think it also weighs into what Heather has been able to accomplish by her outreach to various business sectors to work with them on the guidelines, which once again reflects, in my opinion, the earnest desire of businesses to comply. I think you're finding that, as the governor said early on, this is evolving, and as things improve, we'll open up earlier than we anticipated. Last week was evidence of that, and I think Heather's efforts and commitment to work with the tourist industry once again will prove beneficial, and we just hope that to be as soon as possible because of the impact it has. So,
and, right. And Heather, to Joanne's email, the idea of placards.
Yeah, so we actually have a bat. It's called a badge. It's a COVID prevention badge that, if you download the checklist, is available to businesses. We heard from businesses the same thing, right, that they wanted to be able to show that they were doing this work clearly. And so we created a tool that they can download and use. They are not required to use it. It's not mandatory in any way. But we are seeing it on social media and a number of other places where people are using that as a tool. And Jennifer, I could just go back, if I could, just to the earlier discussion. If you could see the calls that we're getting, the level of detail that people are asking about, can I do it this way or should I do this or that? I mean, it really speaks to, I think, businesses' intent to try to find the most effective ways. And would it be safer if I did this or this? You know, it really kind of, this outreach has been very helpful, I think, on from our perspective. And Dana and his team have done a great job with it, and a number of others, to figure out how do we get those questions answered for people in addition to the checklist. These are people trying to do things above and beyond what we're asking them to do.
Heather, I want to ask you a question about making decisions in the next few weeks. I think everybody's happy and relieved to hear Dr. Nirav Shah talk about that we're going to have three times as much testing capability as we have had in the very near future. Yet I assume that with more testing will come more positive results. How do you calculate what number of positive results is expected and what number would derail or change your plans for reopening?
Yeah, so Dr. Shah actually and Commissioner Lambrou have worked on this package of metrics. So it's not just one metric that will make significant change to the economic restart plan. It's a set of metrics that one of them would be positive tests, but the balance to that is negative tests. So the more testing you do, you're going to get more of both. And so there's a ratio there, right, that is part of that element. And the testing is really about trying to isolate these potential flare-up options and to be able to capture those quickly. But yes, more testing will come up with more positives. It will likely also come up with more negatives, and that ratio will keep that balanced.
Tori on Facebook asks, can you please discuss farms relating to small businesses reopening? Most farms, such as Six River and Bodenham, are shining examples of responsible business owners. Also, agritourism, such as weddings at Broad Turn, won't be happening. Will they redirect their efforts for the season? Heather.
So I don't know that I can speak to any specific business plan. I think lots of businesses have shown their ability to be resilient and modify their work to meet what is available to them right now and to the market. From an agriculture perspective, those businesses continued to stay open throughout the course. Certainly, a traceable food system is critical, right, to communities and to our state. So they were never closed. That's another one of those things. I think Martin mentioned it earlier, right, that we're going to have opportunities. Our ability to grow and develop traceable food systems is incredibly high, right? We have people that do that on a really high quality basis already. And the level of importance that has now to people continues to grow. So it's another place where I think longer term, you know, we may see even better rebound.
I'm going to go to Bill, who's calling from Dover. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling about the 14-day quarantine that's required of non-residents coming into the state. But first of all, I'd like to thank you folks for the show, and then for the commissioner and everybody else that's been collaborating and working to come up with solutions. Good work. So the concern is, listening to Maine Outdoors radio show, I heard a piece last night about the Sporting Camps Association and their attempt or a desire to just allow non-residents to come in without the 14-day quarantine and just accept their word that they are not symptomatic and so forth. And as a resident who also goes to those sporting camps, my concern is that if we don't have a way to check for sure that they aren't, exposed, then we risk the chance of another outbreak.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much. Heather?
Yeah, so I think it's a good point. Sporting camps are in this, rural sporting camps and rural campsites, like really the remote rural Northern Maine Woods campsites, are part of this rural package. And the sporting camps believe that they can keep people kind of on premise, put some modifications in place that Commissioner Beal and her team and our team have worked with them on to keep people safe. So there are numbers of places, right, where you could create conflict there. But if people aren't kind of in communities and in towns and going to grocery stores and things like that, where lots of residents are, you mitigate that risk pretty dramatically. So I think certainly recognize the concern there. We are concerned as well. We believe sporting camps can work through that with their ability to kind of keep people on site, keep themselves while they're there, and then they would depart. So it's certainly not without some concern, but we think that the sporting camps will be able to mitigate that as effectively as possible.
Bill, thank you for your call and your concerns. Dana, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I think that Heather addressed it absolutely the way that we would see it, is that the caller brought forward a very concern that argues for quarantine, testing, those types of things. We prefer the alternative to the quarantine, but nevertheless, it goes back to what you had said earlier, Jennifer, about those who may resist people coming in from out of state for that very reason. However, in this instance, because of the discussions that have taken place and because of the consideration as to how those businesses believe they can effectively operate and still be compliant with social distancing, hygiene, and those other things, really do once again reflect the fact that communication and information serves a real purpose here. And the more that is understood and the more the involvement takes place and the interest of businesses to want to open but to seek the approval and comply with the guidelines will serve all of us well. And that type of call that we just received, very justified, and is the very issue we're trying to wrestle with when it comes to the overall tourism. But here's an element, a sector, if you will, that knows that they can and has proven that to the people at state, most notably Heather and company, that it can work.
Bill, thanks for your call and your concern. We're going to move to Connie, who's calling from Hollowell. Connie, we're getting to the end of the program, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
Okay, I just wanted to share an experience I had last week. My beauty parlor opened up, and I made an appointment, and wearing my mask and my gloves, I walked in. There was no sign on the door saying masks were required or anything, and there were the two people who own the shop were there, no mask, and there were two customers, no mask. And I was so desperate for a haircut that it didn't occur to me to turn around and walk out. And I stayed and got my hair cut, and then I've been beating myself up ever since because I should have just turned around. I just wanted to warn people that because your shop or wherever you want to be has opened, don't expect that all will be being careful about social distancing. I mean, one person was washing an elderly woman's hair. And, you know, I just wanted to warn people that not
Connie,
to expect it.
Thank you so much for your call. I want to give Heather time to respond.
Yeah, you know, thank you for that feedback. I think, right, the checks and balance in the equation are, we think for the most part, business owners are gonna take control and do the right things. But to your point, if they're not, then I would say, you know, I would have that discussion with them about your concerns and or pick a different spot. So, I think this is something we will all kind of work through together. The business owners that we've been talking to certainly don't want to put anyone at risk, and they don't want people to feel uncomfortable. So I would say have those discussions, but also be prepared to your point of walking away if you don't get the solution that you want.
And I know that some people really don't like to be confrontational. Heather, is there someone they can call if they don't want to have to tell the beauty store owner to wear a mask?
Yeah. No, enforcement isn't there. Enforcement isn't any one person's, isn't somebody's job for sure. They can certainly let us know, business.answers@maine.gov, and we every day create a list, compile them, and then take whatever the appropriate action is depending on the situation.
Sure, and we'll put that onto our website. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. Heather Johnson, who leads Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, and Dana Connors, president of the State Chamber of Commerce. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7 this evening. Links and resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from CDC Director Nirav Shah that is coming up in a few minutes here on Maine Public Radio. You can also watch the briefing on Maine Public Television or at the Maine Public website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Public on Maine Public Radio.